Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, bringing you the game-by-game breakdown for Week 7 of the NFL. I know it's the NBA tip-off tonight. We've got a little article on the website over there, Lineup Logic DFS, kind of categorizing some plays for you by my friends Spectre and KG. So if you want to check that out, lineuplogicdfs.com. Listen, throughout October, we're probably going to have some minor NBA breakdowns over there on the slate. Like I mentioned yesterday, if you haven't already heard, if you missed yesterday's show, which you should go back and listen to, some interesting discussion about some things we're seeing throughout the NFL fantasy world. I mentioned exactly how we're going to break out the NBA and NFL shows, and my thought is that I will likely do Monday and Friday for NBA shows, as those are larger size slates. Those are some of the bigger slates of the week anyway. The Wednesdays, the Thursdays are kind of small, dinky little slates. So we will probably have a show Monday and Friday for NBA, so long as they can keep up with all the podcasting stuff here. I'm a little bit behind today. But we have an interesting week 7 ahead of us in the NFL, and I'm going to keep growing on NFL content. I'm not going to mess up that schedule for you guys. So I want to get into the game by game breakdown here, beginning with the Thursday night matchup in Oakland. Nice divisional matchup. This should be an interesting one to watch, because it, you know what, it for me, it's really kind of a make or break moment for Oakland. They've struggled massively in the last couple games, only two wins on the year so far. If they can't get this win under their belt, they're really probably looking at themselves very nervously for, you know, what does the rest of the season look like? 47 point total right now, 25-22, Oakland 3-point home dogs here. And frankly, it makes a lot of sense. The way that they've been playing on defense, not exactly getting a ton of stops on the defensive side of the ball. So from Kansas City's perspective, you have to think this is a nice bounce back. But I do think that there is something to be said for the way that Pittsburgh approached the Kansas City game. They certainly exposed a way to slow down that offense. Just peel those ears back and blitz, 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 blitz. The offensive line, not as good in pass protection as they have been. They're actually dropped down into the low 20s in pass production. Adjusted sack rate above 9%. Allowed quite a few sacks on the year so far. So not exactly the Kansas City front seven or front five that we thought we were seeing earlier in the year. But, you know, you got to like Kareem Hunt in this spot if you're playing Thursday night football, even though you have a road running back. I think that this is a good position for him to try to take advantage of this Oakland defense. As for the pass catchers in Kansas City, Travis Kelce, no problem with that. In Oakland, I have no problem going to Michael Crabtree. I don't know what to make of Amari Cooper. I'm not going to try to project it. It's too hard. We keep looking for these glimmers of light that tell us that he's going to bounce back. And, you know, I mean, I went as far as to read this, and I know other people in the industry were reading Oakland beat reports that were saying, like, look at the film. Amari Cooper still got it. Like, you're watching dummy routes of Amari Cooper. I don't know. That seems like stretching for me. So I'm not going to try to project that. I think Michael Crabtree is your safest bet there. But as you guys know, fade Thursday night football. Say it with me. Moving on to Sunday main slate. We are going in order from lowest to highest totals here. I will give you relevant AFPA data and some matchup ideas to ponder. As opposed to last week where we had a lot of different interesting matchups, guys, there are a lot of real duds on this slate, which means that you're going to see high concentrations of ownership in the most interesting games. It's an interesting week for GPPs because the likable spots are so easily clear and so wonderfully likable. On DraftKings, I think it's going to be a little bit more complex than on FanDuel. On FanDuel, you're going to see a lot of ownership gravitate towards the Atlanta-New England game on Sunday night. It's got a massive total. It's got a you know, high profile, It's wonderful. It's good stuff. Two defenses that aren't that great. FanDuel, it's going to be a lot of ownership concentrated over there. But of course, on DK, we don't have that game. So you are going to see some more spread out ownership decisions to be made on DK. And we will get a little bit more into that tomorrow during the player breakdown. First game, we don't have a total for Tampa Bay at Buffalo. Waiting on the Winston news here. So once that gets released, we will likely see a total and a spread set for this one. It seems like Winston is going to play. That's the word on the street. That's what people are saying. The sprained AC joint, you know, how effective will he be coming off the sprained AC joint? I'm not sure. More importantly, though, you've got Buffalo at home in this matchup, and they've been excellent this year at home. This is a stingy, stingy defense. They are top 10 across the board in, well, 2 to the quarterback, 8 to the running back, 14 to the wide receiver, 7 to the tight end. Not numbers that you want to see as you go in there. Tampa Bay trying to get a bounce back win here. Interesting note from Warren Sharp and Evan Silva. The other day I was listening to the Warren Sharp. Warren Sharp has a show that he does in the middle of Monday Night Football. You know, and they pointed out that not all teams coming out of the bye are created equal. We expect that a well-rested team coming out of the bye is going to be, you know, effective, ready to go. But the truth is that I think a lot of teams probably actually get a little bit stale in the bye week. They don't practice as much. They rest more. They're a little bit out of rhythm. They're a little bit flat-footed, and it catches them off guard. Atlanta and Denver, they struggled in week 6, where we saw New Orleans come out and absolutely crush. So you have kind of a tale of two teams here, possibility for Buffalo coming out of the bye at home. Tampa Bay traveling back and forth across the country. I don't know what the schedule makers are thinking when they make this team go from Tampa Bay to Arizona, then back out to Buffalo. Not exactly ideal for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but you know, the matchup with Buffalo isn't good either. They've only allowed one touchdown and 14 average points at home this year. They've been excellent as a defense. So I have some interest in Mike Evans. I think that if EJ Gaines sits, we saw exactly what happened with AJ Green here, a clear wide receiver one. Evans, even against a somewhat a solid wide receiver defense, or a solid secondary defense, they haven't been challenged, I think, by a wide receiver like Evans. For some reason, Julio Jones wasn't able to get involved in that matchup, but AJ Green very, very quickly exploited not seeing EJ Gaines on the field. So we're going to keep an eye on that for sure. As far as the Buffalo side goes, you'd love to say, let's go get some Buffalo pass catchers. No doubt about it. Tampa Bay ranking 28th to the quarterback, 7th to the running back, and 32nd to the wide receiver. However, we just don't have any pass catchers that are healthy in Arizona, and that's the problem that we're up against here. We don't have Charles Clay. We probably won't have Jordan Matthews. Who is Tyrod shown in rapport with? It's only Nick O'Leary. How much Nick O'Leary do you want against a team that ranks 4th against the tight end? You know, I mean, if we had some decent wide receivers, you could go to Zay Jones, and people talk about Zay Jones, but the man has caught 5 of his 23 targets this year. So maybe Shady McCoy, but, you know, after this team got gashed by Adrian Peterson, I have a hard time believing that they're going to let Shady McCoy do the same thing to him. I think this game is probably going to have a lower total than we expected it to, and if I'm going anywhere, it's probably to the big fella Mike Evans, and that's about it. Jacksonville, Indy, you know, Indy has no offense. Okay, they really don't. I mean, Jacoby Brissett's doing his damn best, but this offense, Pagano's not managing it really well. You actually have some talented pieces in Marlon Mack and Dante Moncrief, and Brissett is not a terrible quarterback. He's just doing a poor job, and Tennessee's defense looked excellent last night with this team on the opposite side, and that's not necessarily that Tennessee's defense is excellent. It's that this Indianapolis offense is pretty bad. Jacksonville themselves, though, excellent defense. 1 against the quarterback, 28 against the running back, 3 against the wide receiver, 24 in AFPA. Clearly not a good spot for Brissett, Hilton, Moncrief, etc. If you want to go to some Frank Gore, I guess. If you want to go to some Marlon Mack, I guess. But the reality is these guys are all cannibalizing each other. Frank Gore, Robert Turbin, split snaps last night. 39% snap rate for Gore, 32% for Turbin. And then the remainder were taken up by Marlon Mack, who only had two touches. He's the most talented, nearly 10 yards per carry in his last, 12 touches in the last two games. I have no idea, but apparently Pagano's just kind of trying to be, play seniority with Frank Gore and say he's not quite ready to be on the field. Doesn't make sense to me, but that's what they're doing. So we can't really do anything with this Indianapolis offense here. No reason to force it. Indy on the other side, we could definitely go to Jacksonville here. The Colts have allowed 32 points per game on average, more than 30 points total, than the nearest defense on the season. So like total points allowed, they're 30 points above everybody else, which means that they're almost 5 points greater per game than everybody else. So 114 rush yards per game, over 4 yards per carry. Fournette, he's been averaging 6-plus yards per carry in the last two games. That's his best on the year, but it's because of those two big burst runs. If you don't have those big 80-yard runs to buoy up your average, then Fournette is probably back to where he was beginning three games of the season, which is about 3-plus yards per carry and about 20-plus carries. So we've seen some increased volume. I think in a situation like this, you can continue to expect Fournette to produce that nice 20-point outing that he usually has, 100 yards touchdown type situation. He hasn't been catching balls out of the backfield. That has belonged to Chris Ivory. The question that I have is are the Jaguars just going to basically say, we're going to run the ball. We're going to run the ball anyway. So the question, can Fournette run it down their throat? And outside of some big runs, the Colts have kind of limited some people to 3.5 yards per carry. You look at Derrick Henry's line last night, 75 of those came on, second to last play of the game, basically. That doesn't really qualify. Now, Fournette, to me, has the ability to do exactly what Henry did. He did it on the first play of the game against the Rams. So I have no problem saying that I'm not going to say you can take away these chunk plays, because this is what Fournette is capable of. Elite running backs like this are capable of pound, 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 find a seam and just blow you up. So I think Fournette is certainly in a good spot. But of course, if you want to get off of him because you say, listen, enough is enough, it's not going to happen 3 weeks in a row, I get it. And anytime you're attaching your quarterback, your offensive fantasy assets to a quarterback like Blake Bortles, then you have limited upside. And that's the reality, is how many goal line opportunities is Fournette going to get that he doesn't create for himself? Or the defense doesn't create on turnovers? Because Blake Bortles is not creating offensive opportunities and offensive trips to the red zone here for this team. He's absolutely terrible. Tennessee at Cleveland, no total in this game. Tennessee favored by 7, however, right now. They are one touchdown favorites. After last night's game, though, I think this spread is going to move. I think you finish the week, Tennessee, at least -8.5 after the way Mariota played. He doesn't look perfect to me. That's for sure. He certainly, I think, had some – he was hobbled. He didn't rush. I mean, he didn't rush once. He had no rushing yards the first time in the year. He went for over 300 yards in the touchdown to Taywan Taylor. Obviously, that was a big one. But it just kind of makes me nervous to think that you're going to have Mariota, who at any moment, given a wrong scramble or moves the wrong way or makes a move too fast because he's feeling comfortable, and boom, pop goes there that hammy. And all of a sudden we're back to Matt Castle, who's just a disaster. Decker or Matthews, they're both in play. The question is who gets the McCourty treatment? Now, I don't think that these guys are necessarily going to be shadowed. And if that's not the case, then Decker lining up over on the left side is probably going to see more McCourty than Rishard Matthews is. But I'm going to try to investigate that a little bit more deeply tomorrow in the player pool, because you know what? They're both kind of popping. I mean, Matthews went 4 for 4 on his targets yesterday. Didn't miss one reception there. Decker got team high nine targets for 87 yards yesterday in that game. So definitely an interesting spot to maybe start to say the Eric Decker train is starting to move here. But of course, Delanie Walker probably is the best pass catcher on this team for this particular matchup against the Browns. We start tight ends. Delanie Walker still hasn't popped this yet this year. His price reflects that. So I think it's a good spot to go to Walker. It really couldn't be a better spot for him. I mean, you have Mariota feeling a little bit hobbled, going to want to target his tight end and maybe some easy short routes. You have a wide receiver in Rishard Matthews, who's probably going to get good coverage from McCourty in this situation. So you want to go to – you definitely want to go to Delanie Walker. That seems to be the move. As far as Tennessee – they're allowing massive production to the quarterback and the wide receiver. I mean, it's crazy. They're 31 and 31 to the quarterback and the wide receiver, respectively, in AFPA. But no one knows who plays quarterback for the Browns, and they have been absolutely terrible. So if Jacoby Brissett can't do it, he is a better quarterback than DeShone Kizer and Kevin Hogan and all those guys have shown. So I don't know that I can go to this team at all. So, moving on here, New York, Miami rematch, divisional game. We're getting to the point where some of these divisional opponents who saw each other earlier in the season are seeing each other for the second time. Important point to make. This usually means less offense. It usually means less offense. I don't know if it's going to mean that in this case because this Jets defense is bad, but we already saw Jay Ajayi get shut down by this Jets offense. We had one of his worst games of the year. The problem is here, well, by the way, 38.5 point total in Miami, 17-21. Miami is a -4 favorite. It's really tilting because the Jets, as I was saying here, 27 to the quarterback, 31 to the running back, 28 and 27 in respective AFPA to the core positions, of course, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end there. Miami's at home. They're favored. They're going to go back to what works for them, which is undoubtedly hammering the run. And they're three ones that wins this year. Ajayi has 25-plus carries. Now, correlation, causation, coincidence, I'm not sure. But the reality is if this team wants to succeed with Jay Cutler at the helm, they need to give the ball to Ajayi as often as possible. Problem is that they lost this game to Miami because they... They lost this game to Miami, and they weren't able to give the ball to Ajayi, and they had all of their weapons. And when you take away Ajayi and you say, go ahead, Jay Cutler, beat us, it's not going to happen. Jay's bad. Jay's not going to be able to beat you. It has to be that this team has, you know, it's just a terrible situation because you love Ajayi's recent production. You know how bad this Jets team is. Ajayi is at home. He was on the road last time. But, you know, in the two losses that he's had, and in the last two games that he's had against the Jets, he averaged 1.45 yards per carry and 2.68 yards per carry. I mean, the Jets' rush defense last year was one of the best in the league, and this year it looks like they're pretty solid. I mean, they're not good, but they're fine. I have a hard time attaching my fantasy assets. This is the same problem I have with Fournette. It gets me really nervous to attach my fantasy assets to really bad quarterback play. And listen, the Miami offense averaging 12 points per game, worse than the league. Do you want to deal with that? I mean, I don't know that I want to deal with that. I may just try and go to a higher scoring team, find a better asset. It's just not my favorite spot. I love Ajayi. I just don't. I wish I knew what was going to be happening with the quarterback position and how this could go. It's just very hard to project. Seattle and the Giants. This is another game, man. 38.5 point total, 22-16. Seattle 6-point road favorites. I think this game is kind of a stay away. I'm not gonna lie. The Hawks are going to come out of the bye with more defensive momentum. I think that they're going, they shut down the Rams. It's a high scoring offense in the league. The Rams have been very good. You know, they stopped the run. They figured out how to stop the pass. I think that they're going to watch some film and figure out where the holes were. They're healthy. They're going against a New York Giants team that just how it happened. I have no idea. They beat, you know, the Denver standing flat footed, but I don't think you're going to go to any Giants in this situation, right? I mean, who would you play in the Giants? Seattle proved that they're capable of stopping the run against Todd Gurley. If Todd Gurley's not going to get it done against them, what makes us think that Orleans Darkwa is going to do it two times in a row against Denver and against Seattle? Now, if he does, then maybe this offensive line has figured something out, and McAdoo actually has his head out of his ass as far as the running game goes. But it just doesn't seem likely to me, and it seems like it's way too much of a risk. I'm not going to go as far to say that I trust Orleans Darkwa. Now, on the Seahawks side of the ball, you would love to be going to the running back position because we've seen the Giants get torched up until last weekend. Just until last weekend, we saw them getting torched by the running back. We love C.J. Anderson going into last week. And what does C.J. Anderson do? 19 yards. It really, really is hard to get excited about anyone in this game except for Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham's going to be in an excellent spot. New York Giants have allowed the 31st most points to the tight end in the league. End of story. Log out. Jimmy Graham, leading red zone target that the Seahawks have. Russ and Jimmy Graham are the real projectable assets in the Seahawks offense. If you want to go there, go there. That's fine. I don't know what else I would do because I'm definitely not touching the Giants. I don't believe that that game was for real in Denver. I do think this is a bad football team. And I think that's it. I think this is a bad football team, and I think they're going to struggle in this game for sure. Moving on from that also boring game to another relatively boring game. Baltimore, Minnesota in Minneapolis, 39.5 point total here, 17-22. Minnesota favored by 4.5 roughly. Listen, Keenum is not bad. McKinnon is not bad. This Minnesota offense is fine. Zimmer's a damn good coach, you know. I mean, for him to have done what he's been able to do, have salvaged relatively respectable seasons with like so many in and out injuries, a rotating door of personnel, you know, it's just a testament to Zimmer being a very, very kind of steady as she goes coach. You know, the Ravens themselves are 13-4-6 to the core positions. You know, not great against the tight end either. To be honest with you, it's a mediocre spot for the passing game from the aside from possibly Kyle Rudolph, who we have seen get more targets with Keenum. You know, he has been a pretty consistent target with Keenum, had 8 targets last week, had the touchdown in the Bears game, and was certainly the apple of Keenum's eye against the Bears in that game. You know, McKinnon is in a good spot. I'm not going to call it great, and I don't know that I want to chase him here. We saw what Baltimore gave up to Jordan Howard, but guess what? So did Baltimore. Okay. Baltimore knows that they've given up massive performances to Le'Veon Bell and Jordan Howard. The problem with McKinnon is that he's not quite the same profile of runner, right? You have two guys who are power bruiser backs who can handle 30 plus carries a game. McKinnon is probably at most 15, 16 carries per game and maybe 5 receptions per game. You don't have the same style of runner, but you do have a highly talented kid. I mean, this guy's good. He's not bad. He's smaller. There's not as much of a bruiser thing here. And I think that the Ravens probably come out saying, listen, Keenum, beat us. I think that they're going to attack downhill. They're going to attack McKinnon and try to take the run game away. And who knows? You could unfortunately get some more Latavius Murray, who is hyper inefficient and just really, really not that good. But if they need someone who can actually bruise in there, then they might give more carries to Latavius Murray. It's just I'm picturing doom and gloom for rostering McKinnon. I'm picturing 8 fantasy points, you know, like, and just being like, oh my God, he didn't get in the end zone. He had 40 yards rushing and 3 receptions with, you know, 30 yards, you know, something just obnoxiously tragic like that makes me want to stay away. And I don't know why I visualize it going that way when I knew I thought, you know, Jordan Howard was in a really good spot, and he was. If the only comp that I have is Geo and Mixon, they had relatively good success against them in week 1, but I don't know. I mean, I just really believe that the Ravens are not going to let this happen to themselves again. They're a decent defense. I think they're just going to watch the film and they're going to be upset with themselves about that. We don't play with the Baltimore offense, so that's it. So it's basically Kyle Rudolph and maybe some Jerick McKinnon shares, but I'm a little bit anxious about it. Carolina, Chicago, this game sucks too. 40.5 point total. total. I mean, right? Like, come on, guys. We've had Carolina, Chicago, Baltimore, Minnesota, Seattle, New York. This is not like last week's slate where we had some really juicy spots. The Bears are at home, but Carolina is a favorite. I don't know. I mean, Baltimore struggled except for the two special teams touchdowns. The Bears defense is not that bad. The Bears should have wins, possibly could have beaten Minnesota. They could have beaten Atlanta. This could be a really different story for this team if they had had a couple different things go their way. I just don't think this Bears team is a total pushover. I think their game plan is to always stay in it until the end. Control the clock, do as much as they can to take the other team off the field. So I don't really like it. Carolina doesn't rank lower than 15 in AFPA to any position. They're pretty solid. We know that. The Bears themselves are really solid as well. 15 to the quarterback, 16 to the running back, 4th to the wide receiver in AFPA. I bet you didn't expect that. 18 to the tight end. So the Bears, I mean, they're not a pushover defense. I mean, I think that they Vic Fangio knows what the hell he's doing. So Cam's good performances mean nothing to me here. I don't see him being able to necessarily take advantage of this, you know, and we saw the deep ball success in the Detroit game. That's what made him successful in that game. Philadelphia took that away from him completely. What happens? He struggles massively. The whole offense struggles. They throw the ball 52 times. They can't do a blessed thing. New England's defense has been bad against everyone, so I'm throwing that out. And this Bears defense is not that bad. So they only allow a 34% success rate on deep balls. So the way that Cam wants to attack a defense, just stretch the field and let his big guys go get it. I don't know if it's going to work. I would like to think that McCaffrey is in a good spot, but the Bears have only allowed 5 receptions to 33 yards, and they're, you know, middle of the pack average against the running back. So I just don't really think that McCaffrey is in a good position here. Who knows how many touches he's going to get? You know, I just don't think this is a game that's going to be that valuable. I think it's any of these games are GPP worthy, but you're really throwing a dart because you have a hard time getting a sense for high quality offensive pieces in projectable situations. Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, 41 points in Pittsburgh, 18-24, Pittsburgh -5. I think this game is low scoring. I think that Pittsburgh's defense is very good. Last year in Hines, the first one, it was 16-10. It was a gut wrencher. Now the playoff version of this game was much more high scoring. The December version of this game was much more high scoring, but Tomlin clearly willing to grind it out in some of these AFC battles. We saw what they did last week. They ran the ball with Le'Veon on almost every first down opportunity that they had. Cincinnati, however, 7 to the quarterback, 12 to the tight end, or 12 to the running back, 7 to the wide receiver, and 4th to the tight end. Pittsburgh equally solid, 5, 10, 5, and 5, and AFPA across the board. This game is going to get ugly. These two defenses don't like each other. These two defenses are good this year, and they're healthy. Well, with a couple exceptions, okay? So there's a couple things that we could think about. The Cincinnati offensive line is bad, okay? The 9.2% adjusted sack rate. It's actually, though, only slightly worse than Kansas City. And Kansas City really, really let up a lot of pressure to Alex Smith last week. And the Chiefs, you know, same exact adjusted sack rate. I think Pittsburgh is going to watch exactly what they can do against Cincinnati, and they are going to put pressure on Andy Dalton in every single way possible. That's one side of the equation. The Cincinnati defense, however, has been absolutely excellent against passers and quarterbacks, and so they're going to put a lot of pressure on Big Ben and those pass catchers, just like Kansas City did. And the running game, they're very good against the running game. This is a top 12 unit against the running game, obviously. So, you know, I think what I had to do here was I had to dive into because they know each other, they face each other a lot. How did Bell, Brown, and Green do in these matchups? Because those are the fantasy assets that you want. Okay. Lev Bell, 17-6 last year, 13-44 the The 44 points, however, was in 2014 when this game actually had a big shootout thing. Okay, you're going to see big numbers from all the core pieces in that 2014 game. In fact, in that same game, Antonio Brown had 28 points and AJ Green had 32 points. That's not going to happen. I mean, it hasn't happened since, because listen to what, you know, this is most recent to furthest back. Antonio Brown, 7.3 to 5.9, 12 points to 13 points to 28 fantasy points. Okay, so that's from all the way back from 2016 going backwards to 2014. The blow up was in 2014. Hasn't had a big one since then. Okay, 12, 13 points is your ceiling right now for these guys. AJ Green, most recent matchup with Pittsburgh, 4 points, 22, 23, 10, and 32. So he has actually been the best in these matchups, AJ Green has. But I think that this Pittsburgh secondary has improved. Last year, they were definitely a target for us. But he has, you know, this Pittsburgh secondary right now is rated as a top five unit. You know, they're five in AFPA. They're even better than Cincinnati. So I don't know how much AJ Green I want, especially knowing how much pressure Andy Dalton possibly could be under. The one thing I will say is this: Dre Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones both are injured. Okay. They've been limited. They've been in and out of practice. We have got to keep a very close eye on this, because if those guys are out, then it's Big Ben. It's Big Ben and it's AB, and we're going there, and that changes everything, because you have AB against two backup corners versus two of the highest rated guys in the league, two of the highest rated, most physical guys in Dre Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones, who are absolutely know how to play this game against Antonio Brown. All right. Denver versus the Chargers. This is a rematch. Again, like I said, guys, we've got a couple games where we are going to see teams are seeing each other for the second time. These guys faced up in week one, facing up again in LA here. Chargers favored by 1.42 total. It is 20.5 to 21.5 in this one. CJ Anderson gashed them in week one. Plenty of production. You're sensing like this is a big bounce back spot for him. The Chargers are 25th in AFPA to the running back, ninth to the quarterback, you know, second to the tight end, 25th to the wide receiver. Let me check that. I may have written down the wide receiver grade wrong. I think there's somewhere in the middle. I may have just accidentally made a typo there, guys. Point being is that I think this is a good spot again for CJ Anderson, but this is the difficulty that we have. You know, they're 25th to the wide receiver and the running back. Okay. The difficulty that I have with this is you're projecting, you're trying to project how a team that's already seen him, already been beat by him, has him on film, is going to react. And are they going to yield the exact same performance? It just doesn't feel like they will. That said, Chargers allowing the most rush yards in the NFL per game. They continue to get hammered by the rush. Marshawn Lynch went for almost over 5 yards per carry against them last week. I don't know if they could even stop him if they wanted to. That's the problem here. And, you know, they need a bounce back for CJ Anderson in this ground game after getting gashed by or getting beaten up by the Giants. So I don't mind CJ Anderson. I'm going to be cautious. I'm going to look a little bit more deeply into it tomorrow before the player breakdown. I'll talk about him for sure. As far as the Chargers facing Denver, I mean, Denver's kind of showing some of their wounds here. 10th to the quarterback, 3rd to the running back, 8th to the wide receiver. We saw them give up over 100 yards on the ground. I just don't see that happening again. They're going to probably watch the film like Baltimore and go, this is unacceptable. We're a better unit than this. Makes a lot of sense. I really want Hunter Henry. I really want some Hunter Henry in my life. We saw what Ingram was able to do. We've seen Hunter Henry's snaps go up, up, up. He is getting, I heard some stat from Sharp Football. He's, I think Rivers has a 105 passer rating when targeting Hunter Henry this year. That's pretty good. So definitely interested in some Hunter Henry here. CJ Anderson's the hardest part for me to project. And whether or not I want to go to Demaryius and Emmanuel Sanders kind of depends on how well they do during practice. They both kind of had little nicks in that game, little injuries. But it was nice to see Demaryius get going in that game that he had last time. I think the spot would probably be Emmanuel, considering that Casey Hayward likely tried to take DT out of the game plan. Arizona versus the Rams, 47-point total here, 21 points projected for Arizona, 25 roughly for the Rams, 25.5. So this is one of those goofy totals. It's a bunch of decimals here, which I never write down. So anyway, it's basically 24-25 Arizona. Rams are favored by 3.5 at home. Arizona and AFPA, 25 to the quarterback, 13 to the running back, 31 to the wide receiver, and 13th to the tight end. Pat Peterson says he's going to play. The question is, he is going to shadow Sammy Watkins? That makes me very mad. I would love for this to be a Sammy Watkins spot because, listen, he's getting so many deep targets. But if he's getting Patrick Peterson, we can't go there. We'll see. If he gets Patrick Peterson, then I want Robert Woods. Robert Woods has led this team in targets, receptions, air yards, target share, receiving yards, everything. I'm not too proud. Dude's been very good. He was very effective last year in Buffalo. Quarterbacks like him because he gets open and he catches footballs. As far as Adrian Peterson, there's going to be a lot of buzz about him this week because, you know, you go from a big week last week that no one projected and then a good matchup this week against LA. Now, there's a couple things that are working against him. He's on film. He's on the road. Okay. And he's facing a defense that is, generally speaking, a total funnel defense that could take away some of the passing game. 8 to the quarterback, 32 to the running back. God, it's so hard knowing how bad they are against running backs. 14 to the wide receiver and 16th to the tight end across all positions. Fournette had a big game against them, but don't forget, one of those was that busted run. That busted run right off the bat. Other than that, he didn't really have that much yardage against them. We have to go back a little while to find a running back that pounded them on the ground repeatedly. And that was Zeke. He was the last one to really do it because they didn't do it in the Seattle game. And Fournette was successful, but, you know, only 3+ yards per carry outside of that 70-yard carry. So I'm bearish on AP. Okay, the Cardinals led that entire game. They gave him so many touches. He's not going to catch any passes. And he doesn't have the burst to do what Fournette did in the open field. He just doesn't have that anymore. So even if he gets that opportunity against his team, it's not going to happen. It's very chasey. If I get burned by 31-year-old Adrian Peterson 2 weeks in a row, I get burned. As for Gurley, I don't think we can go here. He's been great, but this defense is attackable through the air. As we talked about Woods and Watkins, they're 13th against the running back. No running back has really beaten them up. The only people that committed to the run against them were the Cowboys. And Zeke had a decent game, but not a great game. I just don't know if it's a good spot to invest in Gurley here outside of tournaments. Dallas versus San Francisco, 47 points total here, 26 to 20. Well, roughly 27 to 20 in this one. Dallas favored by 6 on the road. Is Zeke playing or not? We don't know. They're literally hemming and hawing about it right now in New York, figuring out whether or not he can play. The truth of the matter is that apparently everybody's saying that all that they have to prove is whether or not this would cause Zeke Elliott irreparable harm. Hard for me to believe that not playing a football game would cause you more harm than playing in a football game. Now, the argument being is that if you're suspended by the NFL, you don't get your game checked. Now, that is undoable, right? So is this going to cause Zeke Elliott irreparable harm, in which case it could be overturned and the suspension could be waived here for the time being? The problem is that the precedent exists already within the NFL's labor organization that the NFL has the right to suspend players. The precedent exists and they've issued the suspension. It's been upheld. Basically, that's the issue. So I have no idea. Doesn't matter. We could definitely fire up Dez. We can definitely fire up Alfred Morris or or what's his name, Darren McFadden, depending on the practice reports and seeing who's getting lead reps and what Jason Garrett says, all that kind of thing. Either way, I love Dak. I think Dak, everything goes through Dak. Doesn't matter if Zeke plays or not. If Zeke plays, it's just going to make Zeke a great play. But Dak here is one of the better quarterbacks on the week. San Francisco, 24th in AFPA to the quarterback. We saw Cousins get it done against them, 3 touchdowns. 30th to the running back, 21st to the wide receiver, and 3rd to the tight end. On the San Francisco side, I am interested in Pierre Garçon and Carlos Hyde. The Cowboys defense has been rough. 26th to the quarterback, 27th to the running back, and 20th to the wide receiver, 14th to the tight end. I think it's got to be. It's got to be Hyde in this situation. Maybe some Garçon, but I think it's Hyde for me. The Cowboys. Zeke was able to take this. No, not Zeke. San Francisco. Against Dallas. Who is it? Oh, Aaron Jones. Come on, Packers. That's what it's talking about. Went ham on them. And that's what I'm kind of seeing here. Carlos Hyde looked like he got back in good graces last week. I don't know. I mean, hot hand approach, I have no idea. Maybe he did something wrong. Maybe he was being punished and we just didn't know about it in that Indianapolis game. But this would be an interesting week to go back to him. It sets up well. Good game. Dallas very susceptible to pass-catching running backs as well. New Orleans, Green Bay. This is an interesting one. This is going to be another popular game just from name value alone. People are going to like this one. New Orleans, Green Bay, 47-point total, 26-21. New Orleans favored by 6 roughly on the road. I'm in love with a man named Michael Thomas. Yeah, Michael Thomas all day. I'm not going to be the only one. Just go for it. He's going to be great. He's really cheap. He's hasn't exactly had too many big games, but this sets up really nicely for him. We've seen wide receiver ones gash. Thielen went 9 for 97. AJ Green went for over 100 in a touch. Julio went for over 100 against this team. Michael Thomas definitely has the pedigree to keep up with those guys, so certainly interested in this. Pack is 22nd in AFPA to the wide receiver. The other thing is there are 4 massive injuries to the starting defensive backs on this team. 4. Devon House, Kevin King, Morgan Burnett, Quentin Rollins, all injured. All injured. Left the game at different points last week and questionable this week. We'll see what the practice reports say, who's playing, who's not. It looks like some of them are going to be out. But I'm not sure exactly who that's going to be. We'll kind of wait for those practice reports to evolve as we go through. As for running backs, I don't mind Kamara and Ingram. I mean, you've got the same, almost the same situation as Jones and Timot. By the way, yesterday I said McCarthy didn't use Jones. He used Jones. 14 carries. He was very quiet. He only had about 40 yards. That's why he didn't really, you know, get a lot of love with Timot back in the game. So I don't mind Kamara and Ingram. Timot and Aaron Jones, you're attaching yourself to Nick Hundley. I'm not going to attach myself to Nick Hundley because I actually don't know how good this Saints defense is. Obviously, they're on the road. If this was Aaron Rodgers, this game would be fucking unbelievably fun fantasy purposes. But for me, it's just the Saints. It's just the Saints here. I think that we have to just kind of stick to that and be narrow in our focus here, because there's no point in trying to chase Hundley and figure out what he can do, even though we're chasing the idea that Saints defense is bad, even though they're not that bad. They played pretty well in the last couple weeks. Atlanta, New England. This one is only on FanDuel. It is the Sunday night game. It has a 55-point total. It is Atlanta 25 to New England's 29. New England favored by 4 in this one. It's Julio time. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear questions. I don't want to hear you complain. The stars have aligned. The squeaky wheel. Dan Quinn is talking about it. He's been underused. They're 28th in AFPA to the wide receiver. There's no reason not to go here. I don't want to hear it. Talent. I'm going Julio. You count it. If I lose, I lose. I'm going to Julio because I trust him. And I think he's I mean, he's elite. He's an elite talent. He's not a touchdown scorer, but you have to roster him knowing that there's a decent chance you may just walk away with 130 receiving yards and 9 receptions and just say that's a possibility for his range of outcomes. He doesn't score as many touchdowns as Jordy Nelson. He doesn't score as many touchdowns. So, listen, this situation is too good. This team is too bad against the quarterback. We know they are across the board below 25 in AFPA to all positions. Massive total. Julio is going to need to be able to keep up with, Matt Ryan need to be able to keep up with the New England offense who, you know, he's in a good spot too, Matt Ryan. But the reality is Tom Brady's in a good spot because the Atlanta secondary is good. Atlanta's defense has been allowing quite a bit of scoring. So for me, all the running backs are in play in GPPs. Now what you have is a very unclear situation on all of these backfields. Not terribly unclear, but I think what you're like is the risk that comes with it, and it depresses ownership. It also depresses cost. But what you're trying to figure out is, okay, who's going to get that touchdown? On the passes, is it going to be, you know, Lewis, Gillislee, James White always in play as a pass-catching back in possibly a negative game script or a back-and-forth game. Maybe you get more James White action in your life. Of course, we saw him blow up in the Super Bowl. And on the Falcons side, Devonta Freeman, nice bounce back spot here for me. In my mind, I think this is a good spot for him to hammer the run as they try to maybe drain the clock a little bit against a New England defense that's below 25th in AFPA to the running back position. So I don't mind it. I think these guys are going to go under own if you want to look to some of these running backs in tournaments and just know that a lot of scoring is going to happen. So there's a multi-touchdown game possible for one of these gentlemen, no doubt about it. Monday night game, 48.5 point total in Philadelphia, Washington versus Philly, 22-26. Philadelphia favored by 4.5. I want to watch this game. I really do. I'm excited to watch this game. I think both of these teams are relevant. They're hard to kind of sort out, but they seem scrappy. They're not particularly beautiful. You know, the games have not been gorgeous in the way that they've played. But I think that you got two scrappy teams with some interesting quarterback play. I'll watch it. I don't know how to project it from a fantasy perspective. I like Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz. Is that helpful? Because get no Josh Norman and Washington is bad against the tight end. That's really what I like from a fantasy perspective. As far as the Washington goes, you can't trust any of these pass catchers. And I've told you that the fantasy production against the Philadelphia wide receivers against Philadelphia, and as far as fantasy production goes, is sort of a trap. It's sort of a trappy dude trap. They give up a ton of yardage. They let all the short stuff go. They will not allow a deep play. They will not allow anybody to go over the top. And they don't allow that much scoring in the red zone. I mean, yes, we saw Odell go for 2 touchdowns against them. But you have to basically target slot receivers. And as much as we were interested in some of these Washington pass catchers last week, if you're not going to get it done against San Francisco's secondary, what makes it? Why should I trust you against any other secondary? So I don't know. I mean, Chris Thompson has to come back to earth. You can't continue to go for 100 plus yards after the catch on just like 5 touches. It's just not going to work. So I think he slows down here. As far as Philadelphia go, you know, I mean, LeGarrette Blount gets most of the work on the goal line, and he gets most of the work in general as one of their running backs. But Washington, very good against the backs, top 10 in AFPA against running backs. So I don't think there's any reason to go there. I think it's more of just watch this football game. Try to see what you can learn from a fantasy perspective. Interesting games all around. Like I said, it's going to be an interesting week for guys who are willing to take risks and take a stand on certain games or teams. This is an interesting week to be like, you know what? I like this player. It's hard for a lot of people to project. Vegas doesn't like it, whatever the case may be. People have mixed feelings about it. I like this player. Plant your flag on some guys right now in your mind. Who you like? Keep them in your mind. Keep them in your pocket. Be willing to roster them when it comes to Sunday. And listen to a lot of other ideas and takes and see what other people are forming as far as what the wisdom of the crowd is, because it's going to be hard to break out ownership this week, no doubt about it. Figure out where people are putting their money. Hey, tomorrow's a player breakdown. Tune in. Thank you guys for listening. LineupLogicDFS.com for all of your DFS needs. Patreon.com/LineupLogic for the cheat sheet if you are interested. Take care. We'll see you tomorrow.